Please be seated. I see that you are ready to go, Counselor, but before I call the second case, although I did see you in the back of the room for the last argument, I will tell those who maybe weren't here at the beginning of the last argument that the court has been concerned that although the counsel are very, very good about stopping their narration of their case when the red lights goes on, the court has not always been so well behaved. So we are all going to try very hard to adhere to the red light as well, so that it's fair to both sides. They both have the same amount of argument, which is, of course, why we allocate 30 minutes to one side and 30 minutes to the other side. So we'll try very hard to follow the red lights as well for this argument. So to call our second case, Hofer Properties, case number 12-2520, and are you ready to proceed?
I am, Madam Chief Justice.
Please do.
Thank you. May it please the Court. I'm Attorney Benjamin Southwick, and I'm here representing Hofer Properties, LLC, and the owner and managing member of Hofer Properties, Mr. Edward Hofer, is seated right behind me. The facts of this case, I'll be very brief on the facts of this case. And that is that Highway 19 is an east-west highway. It's a controlled access highway. Hofer's property abutted that highway to the south. Its only frontage was on Highway 19. And before the highway project, Hofer, the DOT, had granted Hofer two driveways, one on the west side of the property was an agricultural-only driveway, and one unrestricted driveway right in the vicinity of the buildings. The highway project eliminated Hofer's access to Highway 19, and if that was it, the property would be landlocked, and nobody disputes that the DOT would have to pay compensation for it. But DOT... there was a city street. Hofer's property is just west of the city of Watertown. To the east, a couple of properties away, there was a north-south street called Frailing Lane. And what DOT did was extend Frailing Lane to the west in order to give to not landlock Hofer's property. And the town made that extension a town road. And that town road stopped at Hofer's west property line. And then DOT paid Hofer the cost of building another road from that growth lane up to his buildings that were close to Highway 19. So we have here...
So Hofer wasn't out any funds to get to this new access road. Is that right?
Justice Abramson, Hofer was not granted any funds for loss of access to Highway 19. That's
correct.
But
he was paid for putting in a road to get to the new extended Frailing Lane.
Frailing Lane extended through other properties to the west to Hofer's west property line and stopped. Then the state also condemned a private driveway up to another property that would have been landlocked otherwise as well. Those are the facts.
Okay, so what you want is only payment for the loss of access.
That's what we're seeking here, Justice Abramson, and that's the question in this case. Under what circumstances must DOT pay compensation when it has eliminated abutting property to a controlled access highway, eliminated access to that controlled access highway? When does DOT have to pay compensation? And I think we have here...
It's my understanding that the new access is roughly how far? 0.18.
Not in the record, but it's approximately 0.2 mile in a most circuitous route. Assume Hofer built the road up to his buildings that were on, that are abut close to 19. He'd have to go down that new road, across the town road, up Frailing Lane in order to get to Highway 19. And the question here is, and we know that an abutting property owner has a property right of access to what? To the highway on which that property abuts, not merely to the system of public roads, but to the highway on which that property abuts. And in this case, we have several salient factors. Number one, the direct access that Hofer had to 19 was eliminated. And
was the elimination done under the state's police power, or was the elimination done by condemnation, or do you see a difference?
Madam Chief Justice, I think police power versus eminent domain is a label. Police power, no compensation. Eminent domain, compensation. I would respectfully go beyond that, those labels, and say the question is compensation due here for the taking of access rights? And we'll get in, if I may, in a moment, into the police power statute, Madam Chief Justice. So the DOT extended a Frayling Lane to the west, and the town called that a town road of called Growth Road. And after that, it was a private driveway. So the issue in this case, again, is what is the standard as to when compensation must be paid in a partial taking case when an abutter's direct access to a controlled access highway has been eliminated? And I think I could greatly, I'm tempted to say I could greatly shorten the answer to that by reading from paragraph 31 of the 118th Street Kenosha LLC versus Department of Transportation case, because I think, frankly, in all honesty, the court, a unanimous court, answered the question that's presented in this case by citing a controlled access case, Snyder versus State, and the unanimous court in paragraph 31 of 118th Street Kenosha said, quote, when access is controlled under an exercise of the police power and reasonable access remains, no compensation is required. That totally is in agreement with Hofer's position in this case, and reasonable access remains. And this is a case in which the landowner raised the issue of whether the replacement access was reasonable. Many of the other cases, that issue was not raised. The landowner expressly raised that issue in this case of the unreasonableness of the indirect replacement access that DOT granted Hofer to State Trunk Highway number 19. So I would, if I had the audacity, I would now sit down. But
well, it doesn't answer the question. I don't think you should sit down. It doesn't answer the question of who decides reasonableness. Isn't that the real issue here?
And I think that was answered in National Auto Truck Stops case when this court made it very clear that, and this was six of the seven justices, and Your Honor, Justice Abramson just concurred with the result, I realize, but as I read that case, the court said, and that was a not a controlled access case, but the court said that access rights of an abutting property are a property right, and compensation is due when a jury determines that the replacement access is not reasonable. And the court was very strong on the question of whether the replacement, the reasonableness of the replacement access is a jury question. And this goes back to the earlier cases in which many of them in which the court suggested or stated expressly that when access is on a frontage road, that access is reasonable as a matter of law. And I think the court in National Auto was wanting to rebut that by saying there's no such thing as reasonableness as a matter of law. Reasonableness is a jury question, the court said in National Auto Truck Stops case, in my opinion. So I think, Your Honors, let me not be audacious and go beyond the court's statement in 118 Street Kenosha that I just read and say there's a second reason why the compensation is due in this case, and this is an elimination of access case. This is not a regulation or deprivation of access, where the DOT said, okay, you can have two driveways, and one is agricultural. We limit the number of driveways, and we limit the location of those driveways. That was done before the taking in this case. That was a regulation, a control of access. We don't have that now. We have an elimination of access, and that's a different situation, in my opinion. And I look at the statutes. I look at, first of all, since this is a partial taking case, I look at the damages in a partial taking case under Section 3209 sub 6, and that subsection says, one of the subsections say, that the government can control, can have to pay compensation for loss of access except in the case of a duly authorized exercise of the police power. And this court said in the Crown-Zellerbach case that the only time the state can exercise, the only exercise of the police power in access cases comes under the Controlled Access Statute, Section 8425, which we have here. And if we look at that statute, it's clear that the statute talks about the DOT's ability to control access. And each in Section 2 and in Section 5 and in Section 6 of 8425, they say that, in so many words, DOT can control an abutter's right of access to the property. I'll read from 2. Except that places specially designated or provided for such purposes. I'll read from 5. Except that places designated and provided for such services on, and on such terms and conditions as may be specified from time to time by the department. Sub 6. No access from abutting lands, except only the controlled right of access and of light, air, and view. Section 8425 deals with the control of access. That's not what we have here. We've got the elimination of access, and the duly authorized exercise of the police power is limited under those sections that I just read to the except part of that statute, except where the department designates. In other words, 8425, an exercise of the police power does not cover an elimination of the abutter's right of access to the controlled access highway, which is what we have here. And I looked at the case law.
What are the ramifications of that argument? Your argument is that, as I understand it, that it is an elimination of the access to the abutting controlled highway, right?
The land abuts on the highway, yes, Justice Bradley.
Yes. In other cases where there may be access, but it is not through the controlled access highway, how does that flesh out for those kinds of cases?
And I think, Justice Bradley, that's a good question. That was answered, in my opinion, in the National Auto Truck Stops case, where the court in effect said, what constitutes a taking of access rights? And the court said, you have a taking of access rights when a jury determines that the replacement access is not reasonable. And again, I get back to my basic concept, which is that an abutter's property that abuts on a highway has right of access to that highway, not just to the system of public roads, but to that highway.
What do you do with all of these cases that suggest that the designation of a highway as a controlled access highway is an exercise of police power? Carrizella, you referenced earlier, and I think Stefan Autobody and maybe the Nick case, and there are a number of cases that would stand for that premise. How does that premise jettison with your argument here today, or do those cases have to be overruled?
That's a good question, and I think not, because this case involves four factors, not all four of which are involved in any of those cases. This case involves, number one, it's a partial taking. Some of those cases were inverse cases where there was no taking. Okay, this is a partial taking, so that clicks us into 3209 sub 6. Number one, the direct access was not controlled, regulated, but rather it was eliminated. Number three, there was no frontage road here. Okay, nobody is claiming that this extension down in the southern part, across the southern part of Hofer's property, is a frontage road. Nobody's contending that. So we have no frontage road here, and we have a situation where the landowner has expressly questioned, raised the issue of the reasonableness of the replacement access. None of those four factors are present in any of those cases. Trust me, I've read them carefully. I don't mean to be flippant when I say that. So I think we have a situation here, again, two arguments. Number one, the court's already answered the question in this paragraph I read in 118th Street, Kenosha, LLC, v. Department. Number two, the duly authorized exercise of the police power in 3209 sub 6 references back to 8425. And what does 8425 authorize? It authorizes a control, a regulation of access. That is to say, the DOT can say that we're going to limit you to two driveways, and we're going to require one of them be located here and one of them be located here. They can do that under 8425, as I read it, as a regulation, as a control. But in my mind, there's a vast difference between control and elimination. And we've got elimination here. And in my opinion, elimination is not authorized under 8425 as an exercise of the police power. I don't think we've got an 8425 case here, even though it is a controlled access statute, because the action taken here, and I realize I'm being repetitive, the action taken here was an elimination of the access.
Well, isn't that control when you eliminate?
I respectfully say, Justice Abramson, that there's a difference in both conceptually and in the wording of 8425, they talk about except that those access points allowed by the department. So 8425, the legislature contemplating not elimination, but regulate control, where you left with a access point, a direct access point to that controlled access highway. We don't have that here. We have elimination.
Justice Bradley asked you, what's the ramification of your argument? Seems to me the ramification of your argument is every time you have a controlled access highway, which means you're not going to have every driveway have access to that controlled highway. By definition, that's what the point of the controlled highway is to have fewer points of access, so traffic moves and there isn't danger, right?
Yes,
people
just
cutting in and out. Okay. So it seems to me the ramification of your argument is every time we have a controlled access highway in this state, every property owner who had access to the highway before it became controlled is paid for its new access.
That's not what I'm saying.
Why not?
In due respect, Justice Abramson.
Okay.
I agree that 8425 allows the department to control access. Before, it's a controlled access highway, and a abutting property owner could apply to the department for 15 driveways at 15 locations on his or her frontage. As if it's declared to be a controlled access highway, as has happened in this case, it's a three-step process. First, the department says, we're going to declare the state trunk highway between here and here to be a controlled access highway. And secondly, we have a controlled access plan that says, okay, Hofer, you're going to get two driveways, and Jones, you're going to get one driveway over here. They do not eliminate those abutting properties.
Look.
And they can do that without the payment of compensation.
Okay. So if you had 100 properties on that highway before it's controlled, now you got 100 properties and you're not going to allow any of them direct access to the controlled highway. All of them are going to have an alternative route, none of which is larger than 0.2 mile. Your position is, because you eliminated direct access, the Department of Transportation has to pay all of them.
No, not correct, in due respect, Justice Abramson. The Department of Transportation only has to pay if a jury determines that the replacement access is not reasonable, per the National Auto Truck Stops case.
All right. You've got to have a jury determination of reasonableness. That's your position.
Yes, it is, Justice Abramson. Okay. My position is twofold. Number one, the department can regulate the access as long as they leave one access point per property. They can regulate it without paying compensation. When they eliminate it, then per the National Auto case, if a jury finds that the replacement access to the controlled access highway is not reasonable, compensation must be paid.
So what does the statute mean that talks about when you use your police power and you've got a controlled access highway that you don't have to pay for an alternative route?
I think it means, Justice Abramson, we look, first of all, we look at 3209 sub 6 that says under a duly authorized exercise of the police power, no compensation is due. Then we look, well, where do we look for whether, what is the extent of the duly authorized police power?
Okay,
we know.
What is it?
We know that we're limited under the Crown-Zellerbach case to looking at Section 8425. And when we look at Section 8425, we see certainly the department has the ability to control, but each of those sentences, sections of 8425 that I read say, except at such places as the department determines access is appropriate for that property. That tells me that exactly what I've been saying, Justice Abramson and the rest of the court, that the department can control access of an abutting property owner, but they cannot eliminate it unless, without compensation, unless the jury determines that the replacement access is reasonable. Then no compensation is due. That's the way I read section.
How do you know, as a matter of law, that the department didn't provide reasonable access at Frayling Road?
And good question, Justice Ziegler. I look at the National Auto Truck Stops case, and that case says that reasonableness is always a jury question.
So in every case, you would have a jury trial?
No, Justice Ziegler. Only if direct access is eliminated. And then, yes, I agree, in a partial taking case, if the department, as in this case, has eliminated the abutting property owner's direct access to the controlled access highway, then we have a right to go to a jury in a partial taking case. We go to a jury and have the jury determine, exactly as we sought to do in this case, when we're saying that the replacement access is not reasonable, that's a question for the jury. And that's the issue we raised in the lower court. And we're here as petitioners.
Does it make any difference whether something is duly authorized police power activity versus a partial taking? Do you see a difference in those?
Well, I think that's a good question. The cases do not, of course, there is a distinction between a case where there is a partial taking, then you're under 3209 sub 6. When there's no taking, then you have to, it's a constitutional question. But we do know that access rights are a property right. And the court said in National Auto Truck Stop, when is there a taking of access rights? When a jury determines that the replacement access is not reasonable. That would be the situation in a non-controlled access case. In a controlled access case, in my opinion, the department under 8425 can regulate the access, as I've said, location and number of driveways though in a butter. But if they eliminate, as they did in this case, the abutter's access to the controlled access highway, then we're entitled to a jury trial.
What's your best case anywhere that says that?
None of the cases are directly on point, but my best case, Justice Ziegler, is the one I read from 118th Street, Kenosha. Quote, where access to a highway is controlled under the exercise of the police power and reasonable access remains, no compensation is required. The court said my position precisely in that statement.
Well, where does it say that's a jury question? Because that's what you said this case says. Kenosha says it's a jury question. Where does it say that?
Justice Abramson, as I read, and I am the first to say, in all due respect to the court, that National Auto Truck Stops is a confusing case, in all due respect to this court.
Well, the reason I asked you that question is because when I looked at my concurrence, it says, I agree with the majority opinion that the case doesn't present and the court doesn't decide the following questions. And then the last one is whether the LLC's remaining access is reasonable as a matter of fact or law.
I realize that, Justice...
That's just a concurrence, but I couldn't find, and I reread 118th Street for preparation for today, I couldn't find, other than that paragraph that you cited, which doesn't say whether it's jury or law.
Here's the way I read, Justice Abrams, from National Auto Truck Stops.
Auto Truck was not a controlled highway.
It was not a controlled access highway. The lead opinion... said, the three-justice lead opinion said that in a non-controlled access case, they didn't say, they quoted the facts, but they didn't expressly say it was the rule only applied to not controlled access highways. But they said in that the lead opinion said that if a jury determines that the reasonable access, the replacement access is not reasonable, then compensation is due. The concurrence, dissent concurrence said, in effect, let's use a poker term, I'll see your 10 and I'll raise your 10. Not only did they agree with that, but they wanted it to apply to all instances in which. So I would read that to say that six justices agreed with the lead opinion's proposition that reasonableness of access is always a jury question, as I read National Auto Truck Stops.
Well, you really have to read it to find that in this opinion.
Well, that's my analysis, and I've thought about it. I think that the dissent concurrence agreed with the lead opinion but wanted it to apply in all situations. But part of that logic is that they agreed with the analysis of the lead opinion but wanted to raise your 10, if you will. They wanted to apply it to all situations, but they still agreed with the core proposition of they didn't think it was enough. But they didn't disagree with it. I'm out of time right now. Thank you.
Oh, good. I thought I was going blind because I couldn't see anything on the white board.
And I have an objection to those, but I don't
okay,
know.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you can make
just
the
a second.
Objection.
Counsel, did you show these enlargements to opposing counsel prior to coming in here before us today?
So
yes, just let her respond first, and then I'll hear from you.
These are the images from our brief, and so they are not in the record. And if you want to disregard them, feel free to, and I can turn them back around. I did call Mr. Southwick and tell him that the images from the briefing were going to be brought in. So I gave him notice. I didn't actually show him the enlargements, though. So
where did you get these?
That's fine. Just
where did you, if they're not in the record?
So these are, as we said in the brief, these are Google Earth images.
Google Earth.
So to the extent you would like to take judicial notice of them, we would ask
under
you
what
to,
provision
just for
in
clarification.
902? Okay. Under what provision do you want us to take judicial notice?
While you're looking for that, I'll hear from opposing counsel on why he objects. If you go ahead and look to respond to Justice Abrahamson's question. Yes. Go ahead, please. You want to get in front of the microphone, counselor, because then we pick you up much better. Thank you.
I object for several reasons, Chief Justice Rogensack. Number one, they're not in the record. Number two, they do not show Hofer's east and west property line, and that's very important. And number three, they do not show the fact that the town road ends at Hofer's west property line. It appears in those photographs that the highway keeps on going up to that house. That's a private driveway, so I think they're misleading in those respects, and I respectfully object to the use of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the section we cited for judicial notice was section 902.021, but if the court would like me to remove them, the state is fine with that. They're basically just for clarifications in case the court has questions on kind of how this property is laid out. But we can proceed without them if you would prefer.
Okay. Well, you know, if the court, if there's an objection to it, the court will have to take a brief recess and go into the back and decide on the merits of the objection. They are yours. You certainly can voluntarily not use them. But if we are to rule on the objection, I'll have to take a recess so we can go back and chat with one another and decide where to go.
Sure. You know, I don't think they're necessary. I guess I was going to leave that up to the court. The court would like to talk about that and use them if they are, if they help clarify the situation, but I'm fine taking them down for you.
Well, I'm not directing you to do that, but it's your choice. I mean, you can voluntarily do it, or we will take a recess. I guess that's where we are.
Okay. Well, you know, I will ask you to take a recess briefly and decide it just so that we, in case they are helpful.
Before we do that, is there anything in the record that demonstrates what you're trying to demonstrate here?
Yeah, there are other images. I find them a little less clear, but Mr. Southwick's affidavit, and I think I have the date of that affidavit. Let me get it for you. I think it might be his affidavit from July 30th, 2010. It has a lot of the documents attached. So that would be a place for the court to look. And, you know, I think, I don't think we need them. If it's going to be disrupt the argument too much, I'll just take them down.
Well, I have another question. Mr. Southwick described what the town did. Namely, if I understood him, that the town closed access to the highway from Hoffer's property, that the town said Freeling Lane, which is to the east of the property, the town extended Freeling Lane to the Hoffer's west line. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. And that Hoffer had to build or construct on his property a road to the extended Freeling Lane, right? And that the DOT paid for that road or that driveway or whatever you want to call it. And so the result of this is Hoffer had access from his property to the controlled highway through Freeling Road Extended. And that was approximately 2/10 longer and more circuitous than his direct access to this highway before it became a controlled access highway.
Now, if you would recall, you stop that, right here, please. Please
true?
Keep Justice Abrahamson's question in mind because it goes to the merits of the argument. We will now take a 5-minute recess and decide whether or not those reproductions can stand or not. So we are adjourned.
All rise. The court is reconvened. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Well, when we got to the conference room in the back, a number of my colleagues thought that you had withdrawn your request to use the pictures. So that's where I want to start. Have you withdrawn your request?
No, I would ask you to rule on the objection, please.
Okay. In that case, a majority of the court rules in favor of the objection, and you will not be using the pictures in your argument today.
Okay.
Please proceed.
Would you like me to remove them?
You can just turn them over like you had them before. That's certainly fine.
Is it stricken from her brief?
There was no request for that, Justice Abrahamson, so I won't address a motion that has not been made.
I want to be recorded as dissenting from this decision.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Justice Prosser.
Well, it was a 4-3 vote. I joined Justice Prosser.
Please.
And I would withhold ruling until we do a little more research on judicial notice of Google Alert.
Okay. Please proceed.
Okay. May it please the Court, my name is Abigail Potts. I'm with the Attorney General's Office, and as you probably are well aware, I represent the Department of Transportation in this appeal. There's really one point that the state wants to make in this case, and that is that when a state restricts or eliminates a landowner's direct access to a controlled access highway, it is not compensable where other access remains. It is the state's position, then, that a mere change in access, regardless of reasonableness, is not compensable under 3209 sub 6, which is the partial direct condemnation section that deals with determining just compensation. And it's the state's position that elimination of direct access in these cases is not compensable through that section, and it's not compensable through the controlled access highway statute.
So is it your position that if you have a circuitous route to the controlled highway that would take them out 2 miles, it's okay?
Again, that's not the facts of this case, but I see where you're going with that. And what our position is on it is that there might be another route to another avenue for a landowner to get compensation, but it is not through 3209 sub 6. It might be through an inverse condemnation action, which is a regulatory taking standard, which is an available alternate remedy to compensate a landowner where the circuitous route might be so circuitous that it constitutes kind of a constructive taking of the property. But it's the state's position that absent that, denial or elimination of direct access to a controlled access highway is not compensable when done pursuant to a police power, which is the controlled access highway statute.
Well, how do I know that the controlled access highway is a police power?
Couple things. One is case law from this court has established that in almost every one of the cases that both Mr. Southwick and I cite. The Surety Savings case is a controlled access highway case, and the court has held that declaration and then subsequent restriction of access are police powers of the state.
Did the state follow the rules about the controlled access so that there was a hearing and findings of fact and conclusions of law, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes, the state did, and I don't think that's in dispute in this case. I think there's agreement that this stretch of highway that we're dealing with here, Highway 19, was properly declared a controlled access highway, and the hearings were held, the findings were made, the findings that are required under 84.25. And so this stretch of highway was declared controlled access to further public safety, convenience, and general welfare. So that's the finding statute.
Counsel, Mr. Southwick several times cited this court to National Auto as controlling, or at least controlling in part. How would you distinguish that case from this?
As we mentioned in the brief, we believe that National Auto can confuse a lot of issues with regards to reasonableness. That case is not relevant to the case before us because it simply is not a police power case.
Why not?
Because it wasn't a controlled access highway. There was no stretch of highway that was declared controlled access. So we're talking with a regular direct condemnation.
And here, Highway 19 is a controlled access
Correct.
Highway?
Right. Right. So we don't feel that case is
so
relevant.
Therefore, you would be arguing, I think, that there is no property interest in direct access to Highway 19. Yes?
In this case, there is let me think about it for a second. Yes. It is not a compensable, we just simply don't have a compensable taking. We don't have a taking in this case.
Because it is a controlled access highway.
We're regulating access to.
And the Department of Transportation has the authority to change access points and access
Correct.
Routes. That's
Correct.
How you would argue that.
Counselor, isn't a foundation of the police power that it always has to be exercised reasonably in order to be constitutionally permissible?
Well, reasonableness is a term that, as Mr. Southwick pointed out and the briefs pointed out, comes up in a lot of the cases on these questions. But as this court indicated in argument earlier, it is a legal type of analysis, though. It's whether or not the compensation, there was legal access remaining. And I think where some of the confusion comes in the cases, when we talk about reasonableness, is that the court talks about both regulatory taking or inverse condemnation type proceedings and the actual direct condemnation partial taking and doesn't make a distinction between those. So a court will say, like in surety savings, that there's no compensation where other access exists. And then in a second paragraph say, in this case there was reasonable access. But that term reasonable, it goes to a different standard, the state's position goes to a different standard, a regulatory taking or inverse condemnation statute, basically saying that legally speaking, they had other access. So access was reasonable because this was a police power case. And police power cases are very distinct from non-police power cases, where there may be a right of access and even direct access.
But you would have to agree that even in a police power case, you couldn't landlock a piece of property and have a court conclude that the police power was exercised reasonably, would you?
We would agree. We would just say that the cause of action is a different cause of action. It's under a different section. Here, they've brought this case pursuant to 32096, mm-hmm. which is for a partial direct taking. And that's because we took a piece of their property in order to make alternate access for them. And we paid them for that, and that's not in dispute. That amount is not in dispute. What's in dispute is whether or not they can bring in any loss of value of their property from the elimination of direct access points on a controlled access highway. And it's the state's position that no, you can't. And that's consistent with both statutes. Both 32096, which Mr. Southwick cites, says that access can be considered when determining just compensation, but not in police power cases. And the controlled access highway statute, 84.25, specifically gives the state we would consider it broad authority to regulate, restrict, or prohibit, that is what the statute says, prohibit access to or departure from the highway as the department deems necessary or desirable. In the state's position, that doesn't just give us the authority to declare the highway controlled access, it also gives us the authority to close off access points. If by doing that we landlock someone, we would say the landowner has a different cause of action, definitely. That is not this case.
But there is quite a difference between just hypothetically a 16th of a mile deviation, although that might be important to a retailer or to certain transportation-dependent, reliant industries, and landlocking. What about the property owner in a non-takings case, pure exercise of police power? At what point, and I think I've heard a couple of my colleagues at least ask the question, and I'm curious what your response is too, and you've done a marvelous job so far avoiding a direct answer. but I want to come back to it. At what point does a landowner whose access is so disrupted and so deviated. Not a 16th of a mile, but 16 miles. Mm-hmm. It's not landlocked, but it is quite a dramatic shift. What recourse, in the state's view, does that landowner have?
And that would be the inverse condemnation provision for a regulatory taking standard, which is, have we deprived you of all or substantially all of the use of your property?
Okay.
And so there are a lot of things that would not meet that standard that we can do to a landowner that cause harm that are simply not compensable, because what we are doing in a police power situation like this is protecting public safety.
Well, and then you go back to the controlled access highway.
Right.
That you read that in great detail, and that does seem to leave broad discretion to the department.
And this court has even said in the surety savings case that not only do we have broad authority in declaring the highway, but also in subsequently regulating access, continual authority. And so we see here that that is the police power in this case. Basically, the state is restricting access to a controlled access highway that they have found needs to be restricted in furtherance of public safety and the general welfare. So that's what distinguishes this case from other simply a partial takings case, for instance. And that's what distinguishes this case from National Auto as well. So the state's position that when we eliminate direct access to a controlled access highway that is not compensable where there's other access available, that position is, as I said, consistent with the just compensation provisions of the eminent domain statutes. It's consistent with our authority under the controlled access highway statutes. And I read one part, but I'll read again in addressing Mr. Southwick's concern with what exactly can we do under our controlled access highway provisions. I would say that I simply disagree with his interpretation of the controlled access highway statute, because the statute makes clear that no person shall have any right of entrance upon or departure from or travel across any controlled access highway or to or from abutting land. And then it does say except. And Mr. Southwick argues that except means that they do then have some right of direct access. And I say no, the except is there to say that they have access where and how the department sees fit. And that's because the statute says, except at places designated and provided for such purposes and on such terms and conditions as may be specified from time to time by the department. And this language is in the record, was in the declaration declaring this stretch of highway a controlled access highway, and it is the state's position that this language says that the department gets to decide on a controlled access highway in these unique cases, because only a certain number of miles within the state can ever be declared controlled access. So in these specific cases, the Department of Transportation gets to decide how you get on this highway. Not how you get on from your property, but how you get on. And I think that is very consistent with all of the relevant cases in this case. Surety Savings, Schneider, Nick, all of the big cases on this really do protect that right of the state to regulate and restrict access to a controlled access highway. They don't say restrict within the confines of one's property. They say just simply restrict and prohibit. So the language.
Can I ask a couple of questions? Froling Road was extended, is that right?
Correct.
And then a road was created that intersected the Hofer's property in the middle of it, and that went westward, is that right?
Bisected their property, kind of.
Bisected.
Correct.
Property. If that bisected road had been at the very bottom of the Hofer's property, so it's right along the railroad tracks, that would have been perfectly satisfactory in terms of the law, in your view, so that there would be, that would be equally reasonable.
So let me see if I understand your question, and let me know if I don't. Are you asking that would the analysis be any different if the new access road that the state provided was not in the middle of their property, didn't go through the middle, but simply went outside the boundaries of the property to the south?
No, right.
Or on there. Would they still condemn?
You took point 72 acres right at the bottom of the property?
I think it would be a very similar analysis in this case because we're dealing with a police power and there would still be alternate access to Highway 19.
Okay. Now, suppose Froehling Road had been a quarter of a mile east of the property. Same? Reasonable?
So you're saying in that scenario, the additional road that the highway, that the state would condemn at the bottom of the property would have to extend further east, basically to hit Froehling?
Yeah.
Under the facts of this case, yes.
Okay. Half a mile.
Yes.
So all of these things do not require, when the direct access to Highway 19 is eliminated, basically the state can do anything it pleases so long as it provides some sort of access that will eventually get you to the highway.
Under 32096, which is how this case was brought, yes, as long as there is alternate access and the elimination of direct access was done pursuant to a police power, there is not a cause of action under that section. There may be a cause of action, as I said before, under a different theory, under a different standard, the regulatory taking standard, where basically you're saying you're really hurting my property to the extent that you're taking it, a physical taking. In this case, there's no disagreement that the actual elimination of the access points is not a physical taking. It's the taking that is the partial taking in this case was the land for the alternate access for that frontage, or not frontage road, through that extension of Froehling Lane. And that's not disputed, but that's also not what they want considered for compensation. They want simply the denial of access. So there's not a physical taking. It's more of a regulatory type taking, which has a very different standard. And that's not how this case was brought. So we would say that was an alternate remedy if they could meet that standard. I doubt they could have met that standard because the alternate access in this case was much shorter than many of the cases that found reasonable access as a matter of law. So, again, we're kind of bound to the facts of this case, but yes.
Is there a jury instruction on reasonable access?
You know, that's a very good question, and I don't have a good answer for you right now. I could follow up with the court if you want me to on it, but no, I don't have
me. I could probably check jury instructions, but it is simply not clear to me what your view is of when landowners like Holfer get a jury trial.
Well, a landowner would get a jury trial when there is a disputed fact on how much compensation is required. Here, the question is not how much should we pay for the denial of access. It's a preliminary legal question of whether or not the denial of access is even compensable, and we're saying it's not. So it was proper for the circuit court in this case to find as a matter of law that the denial of access should be excluded from the analysis if this were to go forward to a jury. And this case was only not brought to a jury because the Hofer properties decided to dismiss the case after the summary judgment ruling. So there's no question that even Chapter 32 allows for a jury trial, but that jury trial is limited. The legislature has limited it to disputed facts on how much compensation is owed. In this case, we're not talking about that. We're talking about that kind of preliminary legal question of whether or not when we deny direct access where there is other access to a controlled access highway, that denial or that act is compensable. And
what you're actually saying is the denial is not a taking.
Correct.
So that's correct. Why you can't fit it in Chapter 32.
Exactly. And Chapter 32 expressly recognizes this in 32.09 sub 6 when it says you can consider denial of access not in police power cases.
Well, suppose this wasn't a controlled highway and the same thing happened. What's the result?
Well, if this was not I mean, I think we'd have a closer case to the National Auto case then, even though National Auto still remains rather confusing. It's the state's position that it kind of confuses the actual standard for determining when we even use reasonableness. It would be our position, the state's position, that you don't have to get into reasonableness necessarily in that case. What you would do is you would follow the partial taking statute, and you would look at 3209 sub 6, and you would do maybe a before and after analysis, determine, and one of the things you could look at then, because it was, if it's not a police power, you can look at denial of access as one of the many elements that affect the after value. And we would say you would do that, and if your property was harmed, well, then you get money regardless of reasonableness. Reasonableness shouldn't come into play.
And then you're really deciding what the compensation is.
Exactly.
And therefore, you could get a jury trial under that condition. All right.
Yes.
Can the Hoffers go back and now claim, should you prevail, could the Hoffers go back and say this is an inverse condemnation case, and by making us have a circuitous route, 0.2 mile longer and more circuitous, that's an inverse condemnation?
Yeah, they'd have to look at the inverse condemnation statute and determine whether there's a statute of limitations that's going to come into play.
That's their remedy.
But that would be the remedy they should have probably used initially, because what they were looking for compensation for, this denial of access pursuant to a police power, is not compensable through the direct condemnation provisions that they brought the case under. So that would be the state's position.
Any other theory they can use to get compensation?
That's the only one that I can think of at the moment that would kind of really relate to the act that we're talking about here that the state did. But I could just be.
Well, what about, did you argue once at 118th Street?
I did.
Is 118th Street the ruling help you or hurt you here?
Or is it neutral? I think it's somewhat neutral and helpful to us. I would disagree with Mr. Southwick's interpretation of 118th Street. 118th Street really is a very, there was a police power involved, but it was very properly separated out by this court in the decision. And so that case is really dealing with an actual physical taking, a temporary limited easement in that case. So it's a different situation. They do cite a lot of good law at the beginning. It summarizes a lot of the law. And it, like many cases, cites the Schneider quote that says there's no compensation where reasonable access remains or something like that. And I think that a lot of cases subsequent to, back from the 1960s on, put in reasonable without actually explaining where that comes from in police power cases, because it's not required by the statutes, and it's expressly police power cases are expressly excluded actually by the 32096 statute. So courts seem to be including that term reasonable as more of a finding of legal access remaining, which I think goes more to, as Surety points out, more to an inverse condemnation standard, saying, look, you weren't landlocked. There's reasonable access. So I think that's what has been carried forward, that language. A lot of those cases are decided by judges, so it's reasonable access, even though they're using the term reasonable, it's being decided by a judge, showing that this can be a legal determination. But I think it's more a term of art that gets a little confused. But when you really look at the statutes don't require us to pay for access in police power cases or even provide reasonable access. The state often tries to provide some alternate access that is as reasonable as they can. In this case, I would say it's incredibly reasonable, especially compared to some of the other cases that this court has found reasonable. I know the Surety case was over a mile more circuitous, and I think I think Stefan Autobody was maybe 2.5 miles. So although we don't need to look at reasonableness, I would still say that in the facts of this case, the alternate access is very reasonable.
I seem to recall that on 118th Street, you also held up Schneider as being more egregious or more of a deprivation?
Oh, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different case.
You don't
case.
Remember either.
It was a different case, so I'm not sure exactly how we used it in that case, because the 118th Street case, it was a temporary limited easement, so it was a different type of taking than in Schneider. But.
Well, was the police power exercised as a partial taking?
In this case, you're asking?
Right.
So there were two acts that really went on.
I know that, but that's what I'm trying to get you to speak to. The damages for the partial taking are different than what might be due for police power.
Correct.
Right? And so when you're trying to figure out the strip of land is worth X, mm-hmm. that's the partial taking that Sub 6 is talking about, right?
Correct.
Much like in 118, it was a temporary limited easement. So the damages for a temporary limited easement are those damages. That temporary limited easement actually provided greater access in 118, not less access.
Correct.
This partial taking technically provides greater access, not less access.
Correct.
So the damages for the partial taking would be distinct from anything that may or may not be due under the police power activity regarding the controlled access highway. True?
True. Yes. And so, as you can see, the state's position in this case is consistent with the statute. It's consistent with the, I would say, all of the cases, this court, the Supreme Court cases that both sides cite. And it's also in furtherance of good public policy. The state needs some certainty when undertaking actions that are to protect public safety. And when doing that, they need some certainty on what is compensable and what is not, and to what degree. And in police power cases, which are very specific cases, if every question of access had to go to a jury, it would create a very subjective standard for the state when trying to evaluate these decisions. And so, and it would also kind of eliminate the long-held distinction between regular direct compensation or direct condemnation proceedings and police power actions, which require a higher showing and then give the state a corresponding greater amount of authority. So the state's position, again, is that in a police power case such as this, where we merely change your access by eliminating, even by eliminating access to the controlled access highway, that is not a compensable act under 3209 sub 6. And another way to put that is it's just simply not compensable where there's other access.
So long as the land is not left landlocked.
We would say that if the land were landlocked, it would be compensable through a different theory. Right. So it's compensable, but not through the theory they brought it under.
And the landlocked theory is also inverse condemnation?
Yes, one more time.
Your theory in this case is you had to bring reasonableness under inverse condemnation. As to totally landlocked property, what's your theory for compensation? Is it inverse condemnation?
Yeah, it would be, again. Right,
okay.
Exactly.
That's all I'm asking.
Exactly, yep. So basically, I think there's, to respond to a couple things too that Mr. Selzlick said, I think that their interpretation of 84.25 just simply is wrong and way too narrow in its the authority that it gives the state. It's the state's position that we have authority to prohibit, just like the statute says, access to a controlled access highway. And that we can do that properly under 8425. And we would also reiterate that we have a valid exercise of a duly authorized, as Mr. Southwick put, exercise of police power, both in the declaration of the controlled access highway, but also in subsequent restricting, eliminating, and prohibiting access onto that road as the state deems fit for public safety.
Let me ask this. If the Hofer property were the only property in this nearly 8-mile stretch where direct access were eliminated, do exactly the same rules apply?
Yes. I mean, I think your question goes to, it might not seem fair to that property owner, why my property? But in that scenario, I could see the department having a rationale that wherever the property is located might be a particularly dangerous stretch of the highway, or might be right across from and actually is in this case, some intersections with large stores that might create lots of dangerous traffic situations. So I think that it has to be, that's why the statute gives the state discretion to kind of evaluate what is in the public safety, in the public interest, in public interest of the public.
So what if the Hofer property contained an adult bookstore? And you eliminated access from the highway. It's okay.
So you're basically wondering if the fact that it relied more heavily on direct access?
Yeah.
No, it would be the same analysis under a police power situation.
So if there's a direct access highway, controlled access mm-hmm. highway, as long as there's some access somewhere in the general vicinity, the state can do anything it pleases.
Unless they can meet a regulatory taking standard, and they would have a different cause of action for it. They'd have to bring it under a different section of 32, basically. I see my time is up. If there's no further questions, I will sit down.
Well, I have one. Can we use the 118th Street here? The holding is that the property owner was not entitled to diminution of value damages caused by previous relocation of access road. Can you say that there's no diminution of value damages caused by the creation of a controlled access highway?
Well, in 118th Street, I think the court is saying that's a non-compensable act that they're doing. It wasn't caused,
right.
You know. And I think that applies in this case in the sense that the partial taking did not, as Justice Ziegler pointed out, did not take their access. It actually provided a whole other route of access. So to that extent, it is somewhat applicable.
So instead of moving the street in 118th Street, they're now, in effect, closing a highway.
Yeah, and it's kind of similar. If you look at the before and after pictures, there's grass there. Their access points are still there, but they just can't use them. So it is similar in that sense. All right, thank you very much.
I disagree with the state's analysis. I think that all of the major cases but one since 1960 have injected the notion of reasonableness into controlled access takings. And the one exception to that is one sentence in the surety savings and loan case, which says that as long as you provide access to the system of public roads, any access, you don't have to pay compensation. But in the same paragraph, the court invoked the reasonableness standard, and on the next page, page 444, the court in surety said, there is no suggestion that the frontage road access furnished is inadequate or unreasonable. So all of the cases, in this attorney's opinion, that deal with controlled access since 1960, all the major cases, inject the reasonableness concept into the analysis. And that's what we assert here. When the DOT eliminates an abutting property owner's access to a controlled access highway eliminates, then it's a question of compensation must be paid if the replacement access is not reasonableness. And I would suggest that per the National Auto Truck Stops case, that reasonableness is always a jury question. There's no such thing as reasonable as a matter of law. It's always a jury question. And because I say that because the nature of the replacement access is always very fact-specific.
But, Mr. Southwick, isn't there a very important distinction between that case and this, in that in National Auto it was not a controlled access highway?
That is true, Justice. But I look at what the court said, in 118th Street, I don't think the court could be more clear when it said, citing the Snyder, a controlled access case, when it said, where access to a highway is controlled under the exercise of the police power and reasonable access remains, no compensation is required.
But then I guess if I had it in front of me, I could quote back to you all the things the Department of Transportation is entitled to do to access to a controlled access highway, including terminate access.
I think that's a good comment, Justice Gableman. But there's no doubt that the department has authority to terminate access to a controlled access highway. I sometimes say to would-be landowner clients, the DOT can build a highway through my living room if they want to. Okay? They got authority. It's just a matter of, the question is not authority. The question is compensation. And when is compensation due? And I would respectfully, on behalf of Hover, say we've got a partial taking case. The access, the abutting owner's access to this controlled access highway was eliminated, and we question the reasonableness of the replacement access. I respectfully suggest that we're entitled to a jury trial here on the reasonableness of the replacement access. This is a valuation case. This is a compensation case. And if you want to look at it as 118th Street did about causation, we can, what caused what here? Well, the elimination of the access landlocked this parcel, and it caused the DOT to have the necessity, since it didn't want to pay by its own admission, it would have to pay the full value of the property if it landlocked it. It didn't want to do that, so it extended Frayling Road to the west in order to not landlock the property. And
why,
so,
why wouldn't it be an inverse condemnation case?
Because it's a partial taking case, and under 3209 sub 6, we're entitled to compensation for loss of access under a duly authorized exercise of the police power, and it's Hofer's position that 8425 does not authorize the elimination of access without the payment of compensation.
Does your argument hang, then, that controlling access is not the same as eliminating
it, exactly correct, Justice Abramson.
Does your argument fall if we say that eliminating access, direct access, is a kind of control?
Well, that the second part of my argument falls, Justice Abramson correctly stated. But the first part of my argument, and I'm being obnoxiously repetitive when I keep referring to paragraph 31 of 118th Street, we know that nothing this court says is dicta. Okay? The court expressly cited a controlled access case and said the sentence I've read three times now in paragraph 31 of 118th Street. I respectfully urge the court not to overrule that, to stand by that statement and rule in Hofer's favor in this case. And I see I'm out of time, and I thank the court for its attention.
Thank you, counsel.
We are concluded then with this argument. I thank both counsel for excellent arguments and an interesting morning, given the issue that came up in the middle of this case. We will now be adjourned and to reconvene with our third case at 1:30. Thank you.